Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alricky on the board. SP Futures down 47. Well, yeah, they weren't doing much last night, but now they are. NASDAQ Futures down 216. Dow Futures down 274. So there it goes. This is all being caused by 30 yields up to 4.97. As we're concerned about the Fed having to return the tariff money they took from people with this appeals court decision that these emergency tariffs are unconstitutional, because by the way, they're not really emergency, they're somebody's idea. And guess what, we'll see, they're going to the Supreme Court, but I think a lot of people think they're going to lose there, even though they have the court sort of stacked. But I don't know how we'll see. What Carl, what do you make of this? I never thought they were going to have to pay the money back, but evidently that appears to be the rumor today.
Well, I don't know if they'll have to actually pay the money back, although I mean, if they lose, if this goes to the Supreme Court and they lose, then, yeah, that is what's going to happen. I mean, why would you think that isn't what's going to happen?
I don't know. I guess they just didn't. I thought it was only like 1 or 2 months. Plus, they got to separate out some of the stuff, I guess, is going to be okay. The reciprocal tariffs. Some of them are all right. The stuff on, like, in the places where you have a deal, I think, if there's a contract or whatever you want to call it, I think those will be all right. But I looked at it last night, it looked like I thought maybe 20% of them would be okay.
Well, it's so here's basically the challenge is that what the appeals court ruled is that the IEEPA, which is the Nixon era law, does not apply. Okay,
now which we all knew all along. I think most of us.
I have a point of disagreement with you on that, in that from my point of view, what happened there absolutely does apply. Now, you could say, well, you know, I don't think it does, but I do. I absolutely believe it does. And I don't think there in general is anything wrong with the application that's been made there. Now, do I believe that this should have been done in that general approach in the first place? And the answer is no. Okay. So but that's two different things. Okay. So let's separate that out, because I think that's kind of important. And that's one of the challenges, Chief, that I have with all of this, is that what Nixon was delegated the authority to do, and the premise under which he was delegated that authority, was dubious to I think it was more dubious than what Trump's doing, to tell you the truth. In that formally the gold standard was ended under, you know, during the Depression, right? It was gone.
It came back. They went off the gold standard in the Civil War when it came back in.
Right. But what I'm saying is that it was the last vestige of it in terms of international exchange that Nixon stopped. Okay, that was, you know, when he closed the gold window, that was an international thing. It wasn't so much.
Well, it was your buddy de Gaulle coming over with big hunks of dollars. He wanted to go back with gold on the ship.
Well, exactly. And, you know, so now here's
the problem. That by itself, that action was constitutionally dubious.
for the executive to do. Not for the legislature to do. The legislature had the authority to do it. But for the executive to do it, it was constitutionally dubious. But Nixon did it, and then Congress turned around. And
I'm not sure that the gold standard was ever a congressional thing. It was kind of a policy, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. What does the Constitution say about revenue and taxes and the monetary system in general? It delegates all of that power to Congress.
Correct.
Okay? So anything that deals with those issues has to somehow come through Congress. And by the way...
But then Congress created the Federal Reserve.
Well, yeah, hello.
Yeah.
And by the way, it has to originate in the House. Okay, you can't originate it in the Senate. It has to originate in the House of Representatives. So my challenge with all of this is that, you know, as this works its way through the system, and it will go to the Supreme Court, we'll see what the Supreme Court rules. I think there's, as I said on my forum, when this announcement came out, I said, if I was an attorney, you could hire me as an attorney to argue either side of this case. Okay, because I believe I could actually make a cogent argument either
way. Well, you've
way.
Got the argument, if they wanted to play something in front of the Supreme Court, which they would never do, one of Trump's, lapdog, something along those lines, was on one of the shows a few weeks ago on Sunday morning, and she said, what exactly is an emergency? And his response was, an emergency is anything the president says it is. Okay, that's not exactly what the Supreme Court's going to buy, I don't think.
I think you can go I could argue either side of this, right? I mean, is there an actual emergency? Has the determinate now? Can the president declare that there is one? Yes. However, the check and balance on that is that obviously people can sue. They have, okay, and say, hey, you know, you're making this up, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately that gets, you know, that's why we have judges. That's why we have courts. Now, which way does this go? I don't know. But if I was an attorney, you could hire me to either argue.
Well, that's what attorneys do.
Well, I know, but there are some...
Or people on the show do.
Okay, now wait a minute. Now, Chief,
I just said some people on the show.
No, I'm saying maybe I'd be the only attorney on the planet that would refuse to take a case that I just can't find merits on. I mean, a lot of these guys are willing to take, you know, anybody who writes a check.
Well, how many people, you know, defend criminals they know are guilty? I mean, they still get a defense.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we have politicians that are all bent out of shape that a convicted... In fact, New York Times is defending a convicted murderer who was deported. And it's terrible that we threw a convicted murderer out of the United States. I mean, that kind of stuff's crazy. But what you've got going on right now, there's a basic problem with not just what Trump's doing, but what Congress, when you get down to it, what Congress has done over the last 5-6 years. Okay, and it goes back to the crazy, and it in fact goes back further than that, because you can look at this all the way back to when the 07-08 time frame came around and the nut job stuff that went on then. Okay. I mean, you know, hanky panky's, you know, $700 billion blank check, and it, you know, which got rejected. Then the market goes down all of a sudden, oh, you know, it's all good.
Well, they're there to maintain the wealth of a certain class. If you let the market go down, you're not doing that.
Well, yeah, the problem with that is that what everybody seems to have forgotten is that we have, all the way back to World War II, the end of World War II, which we got because this privilege primarily as a result of the fact that everybody else's manufacturing was all blown up. Right? I mean, we didn't necessarily earn it. I guess you could say it wasn't that we were superior because we were better. It was superior because we were the only ones who had, you know, ocean.
We had to be the only. How did William Kennedy say in the book? His quote was, "The only country in the history of war at the end of the war, their manufacturing capacity was like three times as big as it was when they started."
Right.
Because everybody else, any other time you're in war, you kind of beat up your manufacturing.
Well, your stuff usually gets blown up.
Yeah.
Okay, is what normally happens. So, I mean, you know, and that didn't happen to us. We were...
Probably didn't during the Civil War for the North either.
Well, it to some extent it did, but not as much. Okay, so, I mean, the people that win sometimes manage to get away with not having that happen. The guys that lose almost always have it happen, right? So, I mean, that's the way it works. But we took that, and one of the things that I have pointed out on a fairly regular basis, and nobody wants to deal with it, is that we had essentially a seigniorage, and it's technically not, but it's what it was, in that as global trade expanded, that delta in trade, if you went from $1 trillion in global trade to $1.5 trillion in a year, okay, so there's $500 billion, that extra $500 billion that was in transit during these international transactions was almost exclusively transacted in dollars. Now, what that essentially meant was that the federal government could run a $500 billion deficit without an inflationary impact. And we were the beneficiary of this. And we had this, not because we're the best, you know, if you've got a room full of hookers and you're gonna do it, you want the one that's got crabs, okay? Not the one that's got HIV. So that's the thing, is that we were the cleanest dirty dog in the room, essentially.
Well, whenever you're talking about people, that's where you're at.
Well, that's that's the way it was, okay? And we had in other conflicts, when other nations had gotten into dust-ups, whether it was when the Russians tried to go into Afghanistan, got their butts kicked to a large degree because we handed stingers to the Mujahideen, which is kind of stupid, but you know, but we did it, and because
that's where Osama bin Laden became our guy.
Well, we didn't like Russia, so we gave the Mujahideen a bunch of handheld, you know, basically hand portable missiles to shoot at helicopters with. But that wasn't the only one.
There's a little payback for Vietnam.
Oh yeah, you have all kinds of, you know, I mean, the history goes back forever. But when these things happened and we sanctioned people, it was little, you know, dog squeeze nations that didn't really have an international trade impact to any substantial degree. And when the maiden interference that we started, all right, let's not forget that McCain and Chris Murphy were over there advocating for a violent overthrow of the standing government in Ukraine, and they said if they didn't get it, that if the Ukrainian government tried to resist, that we would actually impose sanctions on Ukraine. And they went over there and gave speeches stating that as sitting senator...
Well, that guy was the biggest crook ever. I mean,
And look, this is both sides of the aisle, because you had a Republican and a Democrat that went and did this, okay? So it was a bipartisan thing that the Senate did nothing about, even though it had the ability to censure those two guys. Didn't do it. Okay, fine. So they sanctioned it. They said it was fine. And then, this all turns to a bunch of dog bleep, and now there's an actual war going on. And what do? We don't just go after Putin's guys. We start sanctioning anybody and anything that has any kind of transactional relationship with anybody in Russia. All right, including, may I remind you, we destroyed the value that people had in ETFs that were exchange traded in the United States. Take a look at RSX. By the way, I held a small position in this.
Well, we also, by our actions in the dollar, destroyed anybody holding $10,000 worth of $100 bills in Russia. It's now worth six.
So here's the problem. But here's the problem,
which our people don't quite understand yet, which I don't get.
You know what? But you want to know where the crazy inflation spike came from? It's right there, because all of a sudden, all the international trade guys that are the guy's making toys for your kids for Christmas, for crying out loud. Okay, he looks at that and he says, "I'm not having all my money stolen by these clowns. That's not happening. So you're going to pay me in my currency, whatever my nation is. And if you don't, you're not getting
the stuff." We have a president and a group of people, and I'm not accusing him of being the first. I don't think Biden could talk about this either.
See, Biden did this.
I, I'm saying is
Trump's maintained it, but Biden did it.
People forget, including Trump, that he was before Biden. But my point is I don't think any of them have a clue. Is what you're pretty much talking about, how advantageous it is for us to have this incredible spot in the world.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they don't get it. They've done nothing but ruin it.
We squandered it. Okay, it's gone.
We're certainly in the process of squandering it right now.
But we squandered that seigniorage privilege. We threw it in the trash. We deliberately did this through our deliberate actions. It didn't happen due to some natural organic evolution of, national...
Yeah, but I'm not going to say the Ukraine was into that so much. It was...
That was 100%.
No, we've been the Chinese have been trying to... what's their brick currency and all this other kind of stuff?
No, the dual status that it has that's been there for 25 years.
What do you think Bitcoin is?
Here's the point is we through our deliberate actions destroyed this. Okay, we, the United States, not some foreign power, we did it. It was our actions that destroyed this.
All our wounds are self-inflicted.
Well, and you know what? So now every dollar that the federal government spends in deficit goes immediately into inflation in the United States. And we cannot fix this.
I think it always did. It just took a while.
Well, no, because that sequestration was not on flow. It was on the increase. So as long as international trade was expanding, we got that benefit. Now, was there the possibility if it contracted that it would turn around and boomerang on? Well, yes.
I think if you go back to the 70s, actually, the date that started was 68, right? Bretton Woods?
Yeah.
And what Carl was talking about. By the way, you'd have been ticked off on. I don't know what they do at your double A team down there. We went to see the minor leagues. Talk about a segue. I wish, Carl, I had the imagination to be one of these guys that does all the little crazy stuff with these minor league games. For those that don't know, Carl, we love him, so we say he's careful. If we didn't like him, maybe we might say he's a little bit cheap sometimes, but, from what he says. Well, you'd have been so pissed off. All of a sudden, they go, with the owner of a dark blue, like, Mitsubishi or something, license number, something. And then they repeat it again. They go, you've been awarded the dirtiest car in the lot, and we're going to give you a free car wash from Ricky's Car Wash or something. I'm sitting there, I'm dying laughing, but... Get the next one even better was they decide to give this guy a butterfly net. They put him out in the infield and they launch one, apart, not together, three White Castle hamburgers in the air from the second story.
Oh, yeah.
And if the dude can catch him in the net, he had no chance. It was a little breezy. Those things were going all over the place. the prize was a Crave case, which is 30 White Castle hamburgers, and he didn't get it.
Oh yeah, no. This was something I was aware of when I was younger and stupider.
Okay. Well,
they call them sliders for a reason.
I tell you what, you can. It's worth the $15, not even to watch the game, just to look at the crowd. The people show is unreal. Here's one for you. I couldn't believe it. We have a beer, so head off to the men's room. That's what happens when you have a beer, and. This kind of cute young girl and her boyfriend, nice enough looking guy, they run into her mother. This is like right by the men's room door. So mother might have had a beer or two. So they, hey, how you doing? You're at the game. And then she goes, well, this is like Joe. It must have been like, the second date with Joe. Guess what the mother says?
Huh.
Are you going to be my son-in-law?
Oh, here we go.
the look on the guy's face. I had to stop. I didn't want to burst out laughing right next to him. I just happened to be, because of the flow of traffic, standing right there.
Just where you were at the moment.
Just where I was. I'm sitting there going, I can't believe this. But anyway, our team lost. I think a couple of the guys that were good at the last game had been signed by somebody.
Yeah, we go. That's one of the things that's a tragedy at Double A, right? Is that the guys who actually can hit, particularly the guys who actually can hit or pitch,
yeah,
they get called up, Okay. And so what you end up with is kind of, I mean, like what's happened to, you know, to our team is that, that's an awful lot of ground balls to first base.
Well, the other team, the Mississippi Mud Rats or somebody, this tall, skinny black dude's pitching. The guy's hurling 95. He mowed him down for 5 innings. I'd be stunned if he's not signed.
Oh, you know, look, every now and then you get one of those, okay? I mean, we have Moises that got called up by the Cubs.
Well, most of those guys are, you know, in the high 80s. You know, but this guy, all of a sudden I hear this pop in the catcher's mitt, and I look out there, and I look at 95, and I go, wait a minute, what's this guy doing?
Yeah, you look at the radar gun that they got out there, you're like, what's that? You know, what is this, right? Yeah.
But I thought of you with the dirty car. I figured you'd be out there putting dirt on yours just to get the free car wash.
Just to get the free car wash, yeah. I mean, it's just, I think, you know, we've got another, you know, we've got another thing that's showing up that I believe is changing very rapidly. There's two political things that are also, I believe, bearing on the market right now. One of them is that the outrage machine is running into a brick wall because everybody was all, you know, the Democrats were all just roaring mad about, you know, Trump going into D.C. and trying to clamp down on the crime there. Unfortunately for them, Muriel Bowser, mayor, has now come out and basically said, oh, by the way, here's the stats on what's happened since we did this. You know, carjacking's down 89% and violent crime as a whole down by half. And who
well,
wants...
Police states will do that.
Well, okay, Chief, who wants gunfire as the background of any movie, okay? So, I mean, this is, you know, that's a universal, yeah, that's bad, no matter where you go. You got your mayor, who's basically saying, stay the F out of Chicago.
I've never excoriated Trump for recognition points. I constantly excoriate him for how he does things.
Well, I understand
would it be amazingly beneficial for the feds to help out some of these police forces? And oh, by the way, he keeps talking about Chicago. Memphis is worse, but Memphis is a red state, so we can't say anything bad about Memphis.
Actually, now wait a minute. Now let's watch out there, because Memphis, just like Florida, just in the last couple of weeks, the Tennessee state cops have gone in there, have grabbed a bunch of gangbangers. As it turns out, about half the people that they grabbed were actually illegal aliens who were gangbanging. And
aliens? I thought aliens from another planet.
No, illegal alien is the correct legal term for someone who comes into the country illegally. You know this. And they've, you know, they have like a 50% hit rate on these traffic stops where they're actually catching criminals. We're not talking about civil visa overstays. We're talking about people with actual crimes. And listen, if you had any police, any police department, I don't care where it is in the United States, that was pulling people over because their taillights were busted, and half the time they found somebody that was an actual felon or had a gun that was a, you know, convicted criminal, or, you know, it had some other outstanding criminal charge, not a civil offense, a criminal charge, you would consider that police department to be the best of the best.
I'm not going to debate you there. I would, if I was mayor of Chicago, of course I wouldn't want the job, maybe the first thing I would do is say, guys, I don't know how we got here with every single window blacked out illegally.
Yeah,
I'm giving you 60 days.
Yep.
To get your windows fixed. And obey those obnoxious, I don't know where you go to get the car that friggin' noisy, but go back there and tell them to get it to reverse it.
Put the muffler back.
Yeah, I'm giving you to November 1st. And by the way, after that, we're going to be stopping people. And if your windows are like that, it is okay for us to search the car. And if there's guns in there, you're all going to jail. The mayor here is, you know, I understand. You know, everything is on different levels. I was talking to a guy last night, exceptionally liberal, very bright guy, retired attorney. But he's the guy who wants to believe everything the government says. And if I say, you know, that doesn't really match up, where's my statistics? Well,
right.
You know, kind of thing. Well, why does everybody always think I should be fact-checked, but then the person they like doesn't ever have to be? But anyway, that's another story.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, all right? You have that, and then the other thing you have, which is blowing up in everybody's face, is all the people who are screaming about the CDC stuff, okay? And you had basically a walkout, all right? Because this chick who, you know, was the head of the CDC was fired. Okay, well, now here's what people are not paying attention to. The reason she got fired is that it is alleged that there was just a approval issued for an RSV antibody shot to be given to all infants at birth. All right? Now, there is a board that sits and supposedly reviews the evidence and then, you know, then votes on this stuff. That's AICP people. What's alleged to have happened is that the CDC doctored the data and hid from the advisory board the fact that there was a 400% increase in seizures in the infants that got the shot. 400%. Now, the board voted to approve it, but they didn't know this. Would they have voted to approve it if they did know it? Oh, gee, maybe. Probably not. Maybe, but you don't have scientific debates on the merits and the harms until you have the data in front of you.
I think everybody agrees on this show. Everybody, including me, by the way. Again, I'm trying to agree with you. Somehow or another, this thing with the vaccination, even though they're not really, and the drug companies and all the other stuff. Somehow or another, this has gone way over the top. And yep. I'm not nowhere near as smart on this as you are. I'm sure not as smart as those guys. The fact is, I just have a feeling. How can I say this? I'm a pretty big guy, not just a little. Maybe I could lose a couple pounds. I was a big guy to start with, 6'4". Right. Every time I got a shot about something, any kind of pill, they always said, "Don't worry, it doesn't bother you." Well, it does. It always did. I mean, right. I always had. There's people that have taken like a low blood pressure pill, and they say they never felt it a second later. A second later, I'm feeling like my head's spinning off. So the idea that you give kids like 6 vaccines in one shot. I don't even know anything about it, and yet I'm going to say, what are you doing?
Well, my biggest problem that I have with all of this stuff is as I said, you know, then you had this letter that was this op-ed that was published by all the CDC people, you know, the former CDC people screaming about this that of course the media is running with. Here's the thing. These are the very same people in the CDC who sat over that same review board when it passed on giving every single infant at birth hepatitis B vaccine.
Yeah, it's insane. That's insane.
That's nuts, because that is a blood-borne disease that's transmitted the same way HIV is. Now,
in some neighborhoods,
Chief, you're talking about infants here. Okay, I'm not.
But I'm saying if the mother.
Well, now wait a minute. Yeah. But you could test the mother.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm saying if the mother's positive, then it makes sense because now there's a potential benefit there. Okay.
Hey, as soon as we get Joel, let us know, Ricky.
Yeah, I'm watching too. But the thing is, if the mother's not positive, then there is no possibility that that child will benefit from the shot.
But it's,
now,
what you're,
the first rule of any medication is that every single medication has a risk of hurting you. And therefore, if there is no possibility of benefit, you're out of your effing mind to take it.
Well, you're preaching that I'm with you. I'll give you a real dumb example. Well, not a dumb example, because it didn't look so... Actually, looked kind of funny, but she didn't think it was too funny. My mother, I don't know, she did something. I mean, she's been dead 17 years, and I miss her every day. And she did something, and they say, we're going to give you a tetanus shot. And she goes, all right, you know, I haven't had one in God knows how long.
Yeah.
Give her a shot, and all of a sudden, her head's swelling up like a balloon.
Mom, yo.
Okay, Mom, what's going on? They didn't tell her. They never thought to ask. Turns out your tetanus shot is tetanus, diphtheria, and something else.
Correct. Correct. It's DPT because they don't have the single tetanus shot anymore because that one's not covered by the liability shield.
Well, actually, another stupid story, mate. My mom said, why didn't you tell me when I had my diphtheria shot when I was like 6 years old? I had the same problem. I'd have told you, you can't give me that one. They never even thought to ask.
Well, because they didn't have it. And so they, you know, this is what we got. This is what you're going to get.
Well, I mean, they never even said, by the way, that she thought they told her they were giving her a tetanus shot.
Of course, that's what they told her.
Well, I had an issue in the park, bike accident, this was a while back, bicycle. So And I'm in the hospital, and they go, we got to give you a tetanus shot. I said, I just want a tetanus shot. I don't want anything else in there.
Right.
Guess what the guy says? Well, we got one. We think
it's 25 years old.
We think we still have one. They walk up with this needle. It was one of the old metal ones.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked like a harpoon. You know? Yeah. And the guy goes, you want this? I go, I can handle it. So they give me that one. He goes, otherwise we'd have to give it. They don't have them anymore separated out.
Well, that's right. They don't make them. But that's, again, this is regulatory arbitrage. This is why this situation exists. Okay? And the entire game with the RSV thing, with the entire game with the Hep B, it has nothing to do with whether or not it makes sense. It has to do with the fact that you have to have that shot on the childhood schedule, or the vaccine maker is liable if they give it to you and you get screwed.
Well, the whole idea, I mean, I've had people vehemently say, these morons that talk about it. And again, I just look at this from the common sense numbers side of things, which is, I don't know where that even comes from, but somebody will say, there's some of these dumb people that are convinced that some of these vaccines cause autism, or are they friggin' mine? And I look at them and I go, you're probably right. But until you can tell me what is causing it,
yeah,
you really shouldn't take the other stuff off the table.
Well, here's my thing. I'm not at all convinced that any particular individual thing, you know, whether it's the measles shot, it's this shot, it's that shot, is where this increase has come from. But it has come from somewhere, because that clearly has occurred. Now, the correlate that does match is that as the number of shots has gone up given at one time, so has the rate. All right, now, correlation doesn't prove cause, but every single thing on this planet that you can possibly take into your body through any route, insufficient dose, is a poison. It doesn't matter what it is. There are no exceptions. So there is a problem here, because never have they actually tested just take all the active ingredients out, just take the excipients and the adjuvants that actually don't give you protection against anything. They're just there to stimulate your immune system. Give a bunch of kids just those as inactives and see if you get any bad reactions. If you do, then you got a dose problem. Okay. Well, nobody wants to test this stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't. I guess I don't understand how this isn't. The people that are on the CDC board, some of them have, you know, are willing to err on the side of vaccines, and others are willing to err on the side of non-vaccines. I mean, right?
Well, no. Well,
I mean, you and I would probably err on the side. If you can't really prove it to me that it's doing something good, I don't want to do it.
Well, Chief, most
that's the side I would be on. Whatever side that is.
Yeah, but until Kennedy got in there, all the people on the ASCP were on the side of give it to. We don't care about the harms. The benefits are all good.
Well, I think they put more trust in these drug companies than they should.
They believed everything.
Yeah, they're believers.
Despite the fact that, you know, you had Vioxx, and by the way, these are not mistakes. These were deliberate deceptions. It's been a repeated thing within the drug company business, and yet they still get the deference.
Well, there's some momentum from the past. I remember, I can't even imagine, you know, I remember being little and having some memories from when you're three or four, but I obviously don't have any memories from when I was one or half a one.
Right.
And my grandparents would tell me that nobody would take their kids to the beach in the summer. I mean, this polio was an absolute...
Oh, it was real.
I mean, but, you're not, you know, you could have been an iron lung for however long you lived or something like that. I mean, so people couldn't wait for this polio vaccine to be approved.
Right, right.
You know, and I think smallpox was kind of the same way, although that was a little different because it came from a disease we knew was non-fatal, from cowpox. But people... They have a history of these things are massive breakthroughs, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they ended up working out fine, and there's still kind of the momentum for that, but we're not talking about polio.
No,
hepatitis B is not polio. I mean, you don't want to get it, but
Well, it's an it's nasty. It can destroy your liver and give you liver cancer and kill you. But I mean, that's, you know, that's not a good thing, duh.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, an infant is not going to get it unless the mother had it when she was pregnant. It doesn't even pass through breast milk.
Oh, hey, by the way, we're down on the market today. Plus, I have the, that's one of Joel. I have the list up of the original Morgan Stanley Nifty 50 from the 70s. Everybody thinks, you know, their stocks are, and most of the stocks in here are still around, but some are not. American Home Products, Avon, I guess they're still around, right?
Yeah, but I don't know that they mean anything anymore.
No. Black & Decker, I guess they're around. Burroughs Corp, that's up your alley, no.
Bye. Well, by the way, that was the first computer I ever actually programmed for money was a Burroughs bookkeeping machine.
Chesebro Pines. I have no idea what that is.
Chesebro
Pines. It's got to be some kind of, I don't know. I'm thinking some kind of a skin thing or something. Maybe not. Digital. They were a big trader on the CBOE.
Oh, yeah.
Eastman Kodak. Emory Air Freight.
By the way, Deck was another one that I did programming on.
Really? And you know, then you've got First National City Bank. I guess they're around some Gillette. Hubline. Who were they?
I
have no idea who those guys were. International Flavors and Fragrances. They're still around. ITT. They were the first big conglomerate. They're not around, are they?
I don't think so, although I put a satellite... I was one of the people doing it, put a satellite dish on their building on Broad Street, right? One back from the wall.
Really?
Yep, in the 1980s.
JCPenney, sort of around, but Louisiana Land and Exploration, who the hell are they?
I don't know.
Lubrizol? I remember the name, but...
I think they're still around.
MGIC Investment Corp, those guys, they got buried on... Matter of fact, we had a client. The guy was on the board of the CBOE. I think they sold mortgage insurance.
Yeah, well.
I think they got their ass kicked on that. Philip Morris.
Yeah, they're still around, but boy, did they get hammered. Yeah.
Polaroid.
Yeah.
Revlon, they're not around, or they're sort of around. And the brand's around. They got bought by somebody, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Shearing Plow, they got bought by somebody. Here's one for you. Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company.
Oh, there you go. Oh, boy, yeah. Schlitz Malt Liquor. Yep.
Sears Roebuck & Company. Simplicity Pattern. Squibb's not around. S.S. Kredzky, that became Kmart, right? Now they're still not around.
Yep. And then they died.
Then they died. And Xerox is still around. And Walmart. I'm surprised Walmart was on it for the 70s.
No, that was pretty much kind of the start of when it, you know, it went from, you know, Sam Walton's thing to, you know, to a thing.
Upjohn.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right, so we'll go from that to, we're down almost 50 in the S&P here. This is recent.
Yeah.
What do you make of this?
I think this is the start. I think the hangover is now on. Okay.
And September is historically our worst month.
September is, you know, as I've pointed out, when you look at, if you just look at the charts, and you're paying no attention to the geopolitical background, which, frankly, I think is stupid because a lot of the shocks tend to come out of there, right?
Yeah.
But if you just look at the charts, you have an extremely ominous pattern that's been setting up the last couple of months, where you have margin debt at extreme levels, you have valuations at extreme levels, and you have momentum stalling, where the market is continuing to go up, but it's doing it on decreasing volume. And the breadth is narrowing. That is a really bad combination. And you know, the other thing that's interesting, I had somebody on my forum that said, you know, I know plenty of people, they're not buying stocks on margin. They took out a HELOC to buy them.
Well.
And I said, that's margin. It just wasn't done in your brokerage. I'm like, oh, my God. We actually have people going out, taking out HELOCs and you know, putting in the stock market. That's insane.
Speaking of which, where do you think the a lot of the debt, I think there's some debt. I can't identify. What do you think the debt is on the cryptocurrency, and where do you think that is?
You know, I don't know, and yet So one of the things that I think is kind of interesting is that the irony of this is not lost on me. It shouldn't be on you because you were around during the 2000 blow up. MicroStrategy is basically a Bitcoin leverage play.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that's what they've turned
into. Didn't they actually used to do some other stuff?
Well, they used to, back, the thing is they used to be, in the computer business, they arguably, I can't prove this is actually what caused it, but there's an argument to be made that they were the trigger. They weren't the cause, but they were the trigger for the 2000 crash, in that they had just announced a split, and then, literally the day before it all blew up, they come out and say, oh, by the way, we're doing an earnings restatement because we found accounting problems. Oops! That was like right at the time it all went down the toilet. So did people finally look at their Cisco and say, hey, wait a minute, this valuation doesn't make any damn sense? Maybe. But the thing that I think is rather interesting is if you take a look at their chart in the present time, these guys have gone for, they had a spike high at $543 and they're trading at $334 right now. That's a hell of a drop.
I think we have Kenny. Plus Kevin says Burroughs is sort of still around. It bought Sperry. Remember Sperry ran?
Oh yeah.
Sperry, in the 80s, yeah. And changed the company's name to Unisys.
Oh, that's right. Unisys. Yeah.
Unisys is trading underfoot. Ricky, did you say we have Kenny?
Yeah, Kenny's up, so I'll let you guys go.
Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. I was thinking of old trader farts kind of guys, and as I go through this Morgan Stanley Nifty 50, and I said, I bet Kenny remembers FD stocks.
Sure I do. The Nifty 50. Those were the greatest stocks of the time, right?
Louisiana Land and Exploration?
Yeah. Lubrizol, LLX, I think, was the symbol, wasn't it?
Lubrizol. I don't remember that one, do you?
Yeah, sure.
I know you remember this one, Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company.
Joseph Schlitz, of course you did.
Yeah, Simplicity Pattern.
I don't remember that one.
I don't either. SS Kresge, they became Kmart, right?
I believe so, but I have to go back and check.
Polaroid, Xerox. Well, Xerox is still
around. Polaroid, Xerox, sure.
Eastman Kodak, I guess they're still around.
Eastman Kodak.
Who was First National City Bank? Is that the same one today? The City Bank?
It's not Citibank. It's not the Citibank that we know.
Okay, I thought it was
National Citibank. No, it's not. It's not, because the Citibank we know today grew out of Travelers and then Shearson Lehman with Sandy Weill. He bought all those companies and then it became Citibank. I don't believe it's. I don't think there's any connection to First National Citibank.
Well, they were originally a bank in New York. That's what started the whole thing.
Yeah. No, they were a bank in New York, but I think the Citibank that we have today. What started with Sandy Weill when he was, it was Travelers, and then they bought Shearson Lehman, American Express, and then it became Citibank. Remember, Jamie Dimon left and went to Bank One because he felt like he had gotten stepped over, and then Sandy Weill grew it into what is now Citibank. But I don't think it's the same as First National Citibank. But you know what? That's an interesting question. We should look it up.
Well, he was, as a matter of fact, we had a kind of a debate the other day. You know, somebody, I don't know who it was, but my terrific guests sometimes blur together. I can't remember who said what, but somebody came up with the that we never should have gotten rid of the Glass-Steagall Act.
Right.
For those that don't know, it was an act from the 1930s, really, that separated investment banking from commercial banking. And it was, because during the 20s, that was one of the biggest. The people who were doing all the pump and dumps were the banks. And this is before you could even had, stuff registered, before police had to be audited. So your bank could call you up and say, buy this stock. And you'd say, how much money they make? Well, only we know that, not you. By the way, who's selling it to you? Well, we are. That kind of thing. Something you would expect, for some sleazeball to do now, they were doing then. But it separated the two. So Goldman Sachs could not be a commercial bank or Morgan Stanley. But I think by the time the thing was repealed, Kenny, I don't know if you agree with me on this, it was totally denutted by the Bank Holding Company Act.
Yeah.
It said Citibank could not own Morgan Stanley, but Citibank could reform and Citigroup could own both the bank and not Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney. They could own both, right?
Right. So that happened in Citigroup happened in well, it had to happen after Sandy Weill bought Solomon Brothers, which was in 1998, because I was at Solomon Brothers when that happened. So First National Citibank, by the way, yes, is a derivative of Citigroup, right?
Yeah,
that was founded in 1812, and then it became First National Citibank of New York in 1865, and then in 1955 it merged with another bank, becoming First National Citibank of New York. The name was shortened to First National Citibank in 1962, and then to Citibank in 1976.
Yeah, I thought it was the same outfit. And but it got to the point, it was sort of like what happened with pensions and a lot of other companies. I mean, United Airlines was the stock. But then the pensions were so contributed to, for lack of a, that's a dumb way of saying it, because of during the 70s, everybody was making 10% on your money, right?
Yeah.
So they were over endowed.
Overfunded.
Yeah, overfunded. Thank you. So but United Airlines couldn't steal from there. That's how but they become UAL Inc. And then you could steal from it, which is really bizarre. That's why the Pullman situation came out the way it did. The reason why these people took over Pullman was to raid the pension fund, because there was $40 million extra dollars in the pension fund, which now would seem like chump change, but in 1977 that was real money.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was real money.
And but if it was your company, you couldn't rate it, but another company. That's why when all that stuff happened, United Airlines going broke and all that stuff, they're in their pension fund going broke. I'm sitting there, how can they possibly go broke? They were so overfunded, it was scary. Well, that's why, because they were able to rate it.
Yeah, and now they're perpetually underfunded,
right?
They're all screaming and yelling.
Yeah, they're perpetually underfunded after being overfunded. Well, they're the ones that took the dough. Of course, who knows where it all went. Kenny, we're going into September. The market's down today. What do you make of this terrible? I don't know why. Carl was telling me what an idiot I am, which is true. Actually, I was at an adult beverage with a guy last night talking about, are they going to have to pay these tariffs back? I thought they've only been collecting them for like 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
Yeah.
That sort of never really crossed my mind. They're going to have to give the money back. Do you? I mean, I guess it makes a lot of sense, right? But
Well, it does, but I don't think this is over yet. They left it now to give him a chance to appeal, so nothing has to happen yet if I read this correctly. And he's going to take it right to the Supreme Court.
Well, it's the next place to go after.
I don't think this battle's over yet, right, because it was a federal appeals court that ruled against him. And now they said that, the next stop for him is going to be the Supreme Court. So I don't think anything's going to happen yet. I don't think there's anyone's forced to give anything back yet, if I read it correctly.
Well, are they going to stop collecting, knowing if they lose, they got to give it back or not?
I don't know if they're going to stop collecting. That was unclear in
what
I read.
Yeah,
it was unclear in what I read. It just said that they were going to, even though they ruled against it, said it was illegal, that there was, they were going to give them 2 weeks or something to file an appeal. But
October
14th
or something.
Yeah, they didn't say whether or not they were going to force them to stop collecting or pay back what they've taken so far. I think they're now going to leave it until the next part of this case, which is going to be the Supreme Court, right? And as they made what I read, the federal appeals court, there's really a majority of Biden appointees, and the Supreme Court now is going to be a majority of Trump appointees. So you know where this is going, right?
I don't, Kenny. I honestly mean, as much as we think the court might be polarized,
right? You'd hope to think that maybe they're not.
Well, in my opinion, he's taken this way too far. Everybody knows that. I mean,
agreed.
And there was I mentioned it earlier with Carl. There was a guy, one of his lapdogs was on Face the Nation, whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, and whoever the lady was said on the radio, because I couldn't tell what it was. And he goes, well, what makes you think this is kind of this is an emergency? And the guy says, everything the president says is an emergency is an emergency.
An emergency.
Well, if you play that in front of the Supreme Court, which they won't, the Supreme Court's going to go, now wait a minute.
Right. Doesn't make sense. Right. You would think that the Supreme Court would say, okay, you got to slow down because not everything's an emergency. Listen, I do agree that, the whole drug thing and coming from Canada and China and Mexico, all that stuff, it's an issue that needs to be fixed. I agree. I'm not necessarily sure the way he used it, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to opine on it necessarily. But to your point, I don't necessarily think that they're going to view that as an emergency that demanded this kind of a reaction.
Well, the 50% on Brazil because he doesn't like to prosecute any other guys a little extreme.
Right. Correct. Right. And so to your point, maybe the Supreme Court will sit back and go, you know, not happening.
But I also, it turns out that it's like 70 or 80% of the tariffs. There's 20 or 30 that there's deals with countries that are actually reciprocal because they have stuff like on steel and things like that. Yeah. Evidently, those are considered.
The steel tariffs were considered were exempt, right? They were not part of this.
Well, anything that actually, you know, it's something we actually need here. There were a bunch of them. Was it aluminum? So they basically said like 20% of them are legit according to that law.
Yeah.
So not all of them are considered bad. Not all are being toast.
Yeah, no, agreed. It's just, I think if I read it correctly, I think it's just three, right? The Canada, Mexico, China reciprocal tariffs. I thought that's how I read it.
No, there's a bunch of others. There's a bunch of others. I mean, it's up to like 80% of what they're charging on. It's anybody they don't have a deal with. So that would include Brazil. It has to include Australia. I mean,
Okay, so then I didn't. So then, you know, I read a piece out of Reuters. I thought it was just those three, maybe I'm wrong.
We'll have to clip. I mean, it was last night. We're both reading this on a weekend. So, you know, think of it as, Kenny, it's bad government because the market doesn't know where anybody's going.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. The guy doesn't know where anything's going. It gets more confusing and more chaotic, which I think is also adding to the negative sentiment this morning. Yes, it is September. Yes, it is typically a volatile time of the year. But I think this ruling just creates another level of uncertainty and potential chaos. And, you know, when that happens, the VIX rises and money, you know, comes off the table. Right, people get nervous and they pull their money back. I also think, look, we've been talking about this for a while. I think the market's a little bit overextended anyway, so I'm not surprised that we're going to see a pullback. That's just going to add to the anxiety.
What do you think? And this is it's a tough one because I have a lot of clients that have a lot of these stocks. What do you make of just the general historical, which doesn't mean any individual company can't grow through this and become, you know, 10 years from now the best thing on earth, not the dregs of the Nifty 50 we're talking about. What do you make of like a Palantir trading 152 at $1.50 a share of revenue? Unless they found, you know, they may have found gold under the building, so I'm never going to say you better sell the thing, but if they didn't, it's a tad high. I mean, Microsoft, I have some clients actually coming in that have all kinds of Microsoft. I'm not going to say puke out your Microsoft today, but I have to say I've never seen a stock that big that is 14 times revenue, wherever the hell it is. I mean, it's historically not just a little high, it's crazy high.
Agreed, which is agreed. We've been having this conversation, and look, could it grow into itself? It could. I do think that this revolution that we're in, this AI tech revolution, I do think it's real. I do think it has legs. Do I think there are names that are, you know, well advanced and way too stretched? 100%. Does that mean that we could grow into it? We might be able to, but should there be a correction and a pullback? For sure. And I think we're going to start to see that, right? Not that Palantir is a bad stock. It's not a bad stock. But have they gotten too excited about it? I think the answer to that question is yes.
Well, I mean, because you and I are old enough to, when this happened before in 2000, stocks, because somewhere during the day today, you'll hear, you know, some talking head say, 3% correction, perfectly normal, perfectly healthy, as soon as it's down 3%, you know, mortgage your left nut and buy, or something, you know, and because that's the bottom type of thing. What makes anybody think that when 3% is the number, we're up like 40?
I hear you, and I'm not sure that I don't know where that's going to come. There's got to be a reconciliation, right? There's got to be a realization that it's out of whack. So, but at what point? Sometimes, you know, the excitement gets so much, you just get dragged. Everyone jumps on board, and the excitement becomes reality. But at some point, it corrects itself. I think that's what you have to wait for, right?
Yeah, but I don't want like Cisco going from 65 to 6. I don't want to see that for the world,
no.
my clients or me or you.
Agreed. I don't want to see that either. Although I think this is, I think it's, I don't think you're going to see that right? Because I think this is real. I think this AI thing is very real. But let's see. I mean, look, it's an interesting time in that space. It's an interesting time in the AI space. Every time you turn around, there's the next generation. You see it every day in conversations and how businesses are using AI, how you're using AI, how people are using now AI in their daily lives. So I do think it's very real, but I do think it's also very stretched at the moment.
Like I said, an adult beverage with a very liberal attorney last night, real nice guy. But he's, you know, on the liberal side of things as much as some people are on the other side. And I think the truth is kind of in the middle, but I didn't even thought about the fact that they got to pay this money back. Do you think they have to pay it back?
I don't know. I'm not sure they're going to have to pay it back.
Last month, monthly Treasury statement, even with, what was it, like $40 or $50 billion in tariff money, it looked horrible. If they got to turn that back, it's going to be even more horrible.
Well, I guess we're going to find out.
I don't think it's going to happen. You know, that never even crossed my mind. It's only been a couple months, right? I never dreamed they'd have to pay it back. But then again, why not? If it's considered you shouldn't have taken it in the first place, but I mean, that's the last thing we need for these guys to do is start issuing checks, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't actually think it's going to come to that. I just don't. But
I'm with you, except when somebody asks me why not, I don't know how I can answer that either.
I don't know how I can answer it either. I just for some reason I'm not sure that I think like everything else it'll just get pushed to the back.
I mean, I really can't imagine them giving you that money back. I mean, I sort of can't. It's a scary thing. They're spending more dough than. I was thinking the other day. You know, we have a guy who last week couldn't wait to pull the security Secret Service protection from Kamala Harris. Now, okay,
couldn't wait to do it.
And to me, it's not what you do it; it's how you do it, right? In a lot of ways, and. You know, that was a shot to, you know, some core of his, which I hope none of the people that I know, you know, it's a side against somebody who's female, who's black, and who's a Democrat. Okay, well, that's fine. Yet, I was thinking about some of the stuff we're spending money on. Did he really have to haul his presidential limousine to an army base to give Putin a 400-yard ride?
I think you haul that limousine everywhere you go, don't you? Traveling, I think you haul it everywhere you go, only because it is, you know, it's bulletproof, it's fireproof, it's, you know, it's an armored vehicle. I think it has to go everywhere that he goes.
But he was on an army base.
Yeah, I hear you. But I think it's just that's just the way it is, right? What's he going to show up in a rented Cadillac?
You're landing at the base. What do you need a car for at all?
I don't know. I don't know where they went on the base. How far did they go? Could they walk? I mean, did they go to the other side of the base? I don't know.
I'm just saying, you and I probably would not have bought it with.
Maybe not, but I'm also not the president of the United States, right?
Well, you know, we could get you there. You know, we could get you there.
Yeah, but you know, I suppose. Like any president, right? They're always at risk. There's going to be some crazy that's potentially always at risk, no matter where you are. And so I think it's just part of the job. It goes with you wherever you go.
I'd get rid of some of that stuff if it was me. That's nuts.
Well, okay, I agree, but you know, we're not. You and I are not in that position, so we don't get the chance to make that call. And I'm glad I'm not in that position. The last thing I want to do is be president.
Oh God,
it'd
feel like jail to me.
Interest.
All you guys would have to be at Camp Dave every weekend, and I could scoot down there and have a drink with you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine being in a White House. I mean, I'd be out of there every weekend.
Although
you are busy enough all day, where it's not like you're bored. I can't imagine you being bored.
No, I don't think it's a matter of being bored at all. I don't think it's a matter of being bored at all, but I just have zero interest.
Didn't Clinton and Bill and Hillary used to go out to dinner a couple nights a week and stuff, didn't they?
They used to go out to dinner in D.C.
Yeah.
I think Barack Obama did the same thing in D.C. They used to go out to local restaurants. Certainly they were covered by Secret Service, but I think they used to kind of walk around the city and go out to dinner.
There was pictures of Truman walking through all the neighborhoods with like one Secret Service guy.
Yeah. Well, he was able to do that then. He couldn't do that today.
Well, right. Maybe you could. I mean, nobody's going to do it, but, you know, who knows?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could.
Well, now, sure. Today, is this a lot of stuff's happening here. We've got the S&P is down 56, which is a kind of a low here. By the way, these things weren't even down last night.
No, they weren't. Actually, they were up. When I looked at it last night before I went to bed, they were actually slightly higher. It was up 3 points or 4 points. I thought, well, that's interesting, considering the news, you know, that tariff news. And I thought, okay, that's going to create some chaos. And then I woke up this morning and you saw that they were, you know, global markets are down, European markets are down, Asian markets are down mostly. And then US futures turned lower. And I'm not surprised, though. Look, it's after Labor Day. Everyone's back from their holiday vacations. Most people are back at their desks. There's a lot of macro data this week and next week. And then the week after that's the FOMC meeting. Now the narrative once again between is it 25, is it 50? A lot of that's going to be dependent on what we hear from the macro data over the next couple of weeks, right? Gold has skyrocketed. It's up $70, I think, since Friday.
Yeah.
It's way up now. It's going to test the, you know, what I think it was the April high at 35.80 or something like that. I think we traded as high as 35.78 overnight. So we nearly touched it. But I think that suggests more unrest and more nervousness and potentially a larger rate cut come September. Now, I'm still in the camp you're going to get 25. I don't think, you know, 2 weeks ago, if you had asked me, I would have said 50. Then we got that PPI number, and I'm going, okay, that's going to give them some cover to be a little bit less aggressive. I'm still in that camp. But we're going to get CPI and PPI next week as well. That's the one last inflation look before the meeting. And remember, it was PPI that you know, sent the markets into a tailspin last month when it came out because it was much hotter than expected.
Well, the service part, I think some of the costs of doing business,
right?
Even though, you know, a lot of people, you know, we have people on the show. And this has been, I mean, kind of pushing back at a lot of the guests where everybody will talk about the food store and gasoline, and I keep saying you got to get past that because your health insurance, your homeowner's insurance, those things are coming right up your behind. And yeah. God help you if you got to get a new air conditioner or a new roof or anything like that. And I think when you look at the service part of it, I mean, a part of what your plumber is way more expensive.
Yeah,
you could blame it on the plumber, but you also could find out he just paid $85,000 for his last pickup truck.
85. I bet you it's more than 100.
If it's all outfitted with the stuff inside, it's probably $250,000.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I'm saying, 100%. But the, you know, the copper pipe he just put in is now 40% higher. So it's not like when they say services, it's not limited to the guy.
No,
or the lady. You know, it's
no, agreed.
You know, I suppose you and I don't think go to the beauty parlors, but tell by looking at us. But the you know, part of that is it's not just the lady doing your hair. Or guy, I remember the movie Shampoo, Warren Beatty.
No, but it's the electricity to run the place, right?
It's the shampoo, all that stuff.
Right.
So it creeps into the other side, and I don't think we've ever gotten a straight number, really. If we start going past, you know, Kenny, I just think it's sort of bad government. And when I say that, I'm going to mention you last week. I got three people that essentially govern me, for lack of a term. Got a mayor, a governor, and a president. And I don't think, I always thought Pritzker was supposedly pretty smart. I don't know if any of those people could get a piece of paper like you and I did in college and say, okay, here's what you're proposing. Sketch out for me the next 5 years who it affects and how and why.
Right.
I don't think any one of these three people wants to, cares to, or could do that. And I find it amazingly scary. I mean, the people were pissing off. It's one thing to piss off everybody in 1946, when I'm going to say, even in 1970 something, when I was in grad school, for Milton Friedman to say, government deficits don't really make any difference because all it is the population, the government owing the population money. It's like the husband owing the wife money, the house is flat, but now. It's not the way it is. 50% of the, or 45% of the debt is owed outside the country. And by the way, we're broke and we need that. So if you piss off Japan when you probably don't have to. And all of a sudden, these guys, we owe these people. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't do your regular government stuff, but you have to have an awareness of how all this ties together.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I'm not seeing it. Or am I just? I mean,
no, I think you do have to have an awareness, and I think the issue is that there are a lot of people out there that can't tie it together. They're unaware, and so I think that's going to be part of the issue, right? When they finally realize and recognize and put it all together. I think that's what you have to worry about.
Well, I mean,
I don't necessarily mean that, you know, you're going to see anything, you're going to see the markets crash. That's not what I mean at all. What I mean is that I think there's going to be a realization.
Well, if all of a sudden these guys keep coming with less and less money to the table, and we need to do more and more from here, I can see this 30-year rate. I can see it at 8%, Kenny. And that's I don't know if that's crash, but it's a problem.
Well, it's going to be a problem. Of course it's going to be a problem. Look, 5% is going to be a problem. We're kissing that right now. I think we're trading at 4.98%.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were 4.93 or something on Friday morning.
A week ago, we were down in the 4.8s. We're in the 4.8s.
Yeah, 5% is going to certainly be an issue for investors in the market. And look, we pierced it. When did we pierce it? 6 months ago? We pierced it
for a second.
But if we pierce it and then stay there, and we end up trading above 5% consistently, then I think you're going to see much more pressure on stocks. There'll be a new conversation about, you know, how to invest.
We got to 5.1 on 10/2/23.
Right, a year ago.
And then we got to, where do we nudge? 5.1 on 5/1/25, went right back down.
Right. So if we pierce up and through, that 5.1 will be the level to watch, right? Because we've tested it twice now, in October again in May. Failed both times.
Yeah.
So now we'll test it again. The third time, it's either going to be a charm or it's not. It's either going to fail again or it's going to bust up and through. If it busts up and through, then there'll be a new conversation about where rates are going, what stocks are doing, you know, valuations and all that stuff.
But for the last, you know, pick a number, how many years, every time that has happened, the Fed has essentially created money,
right.
And went and bought the damn things. I think that ship has sailed, Sandy. If they do that again, I think it's going to make it worse.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to be able to do it again.
There's got to be a point of tension between the president and Powell there, boy.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, Powell essentially is you know, I mean, look, at some point he becomes a lame duck, right? Now, it may not be the September meeting, but it might be sometime this fall, because if Trump appoints, you know, to those empty spots, a new person that's perceived to be the new Fed chair, or at least the, you know, high up on the list, there's going to be like that shadow Fed president that's going to question everything that happens. And so they'll essentially neuter him if that's the case.
But the thing they're arguing about, I mean, this for the listeners, this is, it's really very simple. Are you going to pour more money into the system to try and save the market, to try and save somebody who might own the Doral and has a mortgage on it? And it was a cheap shot, right? But I mean, those are the guys that benefit by the more money in the system.
Sure, of course.
I think we're at a turning point here where if they try and do that, it's going to backfire on them. And I just hope that the Trump people are smart enough to realize that. And I don't.
Well, I would like to think Scott Bessent, who I think is a fairly smart guy, would realize that. I have a lot of respect for Scott Bessent.
I don't know if I trust him all that much, but I think he's pretty bright.
Yeah, I think he's pretty bright. I think he's brighter than Howie Lutnick for sure. But that's a whole other conversation.
Well, they got a couple people there that I wonder where the hell they got him. But you know, I worry about the simple stuff I see coming out of the governor. I mean, a few weeks ago he signed a bill that's going to give, and this is, you know, people ask, what the hell is he even talking about? He signed a bill regarding equine therapy for kids with autism.
Out of your governor, Pritzker.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there going, I can't think of anything nicer than if you had people with autism to have some kind of a weekend getaway or something. But then I look at the logistics of it and I go, what if a kid on my block has autism? There isn't a horse in 40 miles.
Right.
I mean, are we going to have, who's going to pay for the training of horses for kids to ride them, or are we going to talk about pony? If it could happen and it was close and it was convenient, Kenny, I'd do anything in the world for those kids. But but the logistics of it, did you think it's now? Can a kid in my block demand an Uber out to some, you know, some
stable? How's he going
to
get there?
How's he going to get there? How's he going to get back? Who's going to pay for the horse? Who's going to pay for? I mean, you're not going to let him on a horse by himself, I hope. It's got to be somebody with him. I mean, do we think anything through? The mayor, the same way. He doesn't think anything through. I mean, I don't even go there with that guy. But he's not even capable of. He doesn't even know. Well, I was going to say something. If you pee, you leave a puddle on the side. Well, I don't even think he gets that. You know, you wonder how are these our people?
Wow, that's a whole different conversation. You know, that's a whole different conversation about how are these our people when you turn around and you look at them. But that's, you know, listen, I got to jump because I get ready for another interview at 8:30.
I hear you're running against the mayor in New York.
I'm not going to throw my name in that. It's already fractioned. There's now 5 people running. In addition to Mondami, there's 4 other people. There's a new Cuban guy who jumped into the race.
Well, you can
He's
sweep
relatively
in.
New.
You can sweep in.
Yeah, I could. Listen, again, like I don't want to be president. I don't want to be mayor of New York City.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, talk at you next week, buddy.
All right, see ya.
Do we have the professor?
Yes, we do.
Well, how are you, bud?
What's
You're listening to all this. What are you saying? How was your weekend?
Oh, it was pretty good. I told you last week we were going to meet up with my Navy buddies from the Truxton, and it was a hoot. We had a few too many adult beverages.
Can you imagine? I guess I could have predicted that.
And I don't usually have any adult beverages. I have maybe one a year. And
you had one when we were together.
When we were there, but usually I have like one a year. And this weekend I did about 33 decades worth of adult beverage consumption.
Oh, God. Well, I was thinking about you. I was reading something from Quora, and they were talking about nuclear-powered cruisers. How many were there? Were there like 2 or 3?
Well, you know, the best question, best person to answer that question is my buddy Hank, who was there this weekend. And by the way, when he has a few too many, he likes to burn things up, and he went through some pickle relish and pickles. He threw them in the fire.
Oh, God.
But he's the guy that would be able to answer those kind of questions. He could sit on the flight deck of our little cruiser, nuclear cruiser, and he'd look up and he'd tell me what kind of plane that was flying overhead. And I'm like, okay, I know where the bow is. I know where the stern is.
Well, I mean, it wasn't 10. I think it was more than one. And somewhere, I'm going to say,
there were on the East Coast or the West Coast, and there's a few bases. And Bremerton, I'm thinking, the Nimitz was there, and you got its battle group. So the little cruisers are gone.
That's what I mean. The cruisers, had to do with the.
They're all like gas turbines now, the cruisers. But the one thing about a nuclear-powered cruiser is, well, it's kind of bad if you're married and you're on the ship, but it never needs to be refueled. Well, not never, but it can go. I think our ship went, 14 years without being refueled. So anytime we needed a, you know, response to something, they would send the Tommy T, the Thomas Truxton.
Well, the big question was, how often is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier have to be refueled?
Yeah.
But it's a two-part question.
Yeah.
Because the ship, every 15 years or something, it needs to be refueled every other day for the airplane fuel and food and all the other stuff you need.
Yeah.
So,
well, they got some massive tanks on those carriers. So I'm not sure if it's every day.
No, it's like every they said like every couple of days if you're launching.
Yeah.
And there was a big thing about how tough that is, because you're running next to each other in the ocean.
Yeah.
And if those you separate
are,
too far or get too close,
like tankers. Those things are like tankers, though.
What the?
We were at the Nimitz. I think we were at the Nimitz. Maybe it was the Nimitz. It's been a while. But we were in an aircraft carrier group and we went on Westpac, and I don't recall them refueling all that often with, you know, jet fuel. I don't recall that at all. We would
maybe it was every few. But I mean, if you're launching you know, if you're in the Mediterranean, things are coming and going all day long.
Yeah.
We're talking about food. I mean, you got to have more food than 2 days. But
yeah.
But I'm saying that this constant thing, and if you're, you know, in the ocean, you're doing it at the U.S. Navy. Is like the only guys that can do it at sea. They said it's such a tricky maneuver. There's only a couple guys you want at the helm when you're doing that. And
those refueling things are a trip, man. Watching the goods come from a supply ship on our little ship. It was a trip watching that because you don't even they don't make movies about it, right? They don't make movies about them shooting the string over and then you pulling over the cables and then lowering the goods from their ship to ours. And
airplane fuel is pretty, you know, I think that's pretty volatile, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're 100 feet away, so you probably have 30 feet of slack in the thing.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden you hit a wave and you're 110 feet away, you yank the thing, right? Yuck. Or if you're too close, you bump.
You definitely want calm seas, that's for sure.
Well, here's the list. The first one was the first one was number 9. The U.S. Long Beach, the Bainbridge, then the Truxton. That was yours, right?
Yeah, the Truxton, yeah.
Then there was 2 California class. The California, which used to be Battleship, but that one's not. USS California went down and came up in Pearl Harbor. USS South Carolina, and then there were 4 Virginia class. They might still be around. The Virginia, the Texas, the Mississippi, and the Arkansas.
Well, I think all the cruisers are decommissioned, all the nuclear-powered cruisers. I think the only thing left that's nuclear-powered are probably the submarines and the aircraft carriers. I think everything else is gas turbine.
The last one was the Arkansas. Was a Virginia class commissioned October 1980 through July 1998. All right. So she was 18 years.
That sounds
years.
About right, yeah.
I thought they lasted more than 18 years, but
yeah.
But her job was to do what you just said. It was run next to aircraft carriers.
Yeah. We had a 4-inch gun, I think it was, and my second berthing on the ship was right below the 4-inch gun. And I don't know if they did this on purpose, but when you're standing a watch from... When you're standing 3-5-hour watches a day, and, you know, you get a sleep in till, like, I don't know, 6 a.m.,
Sort of, yeah.
And then they shoot off these 4-inch shells at like 6:15 a.m. they shake the let's just say they shake your mattress around pretty good.
Well, this thing had a phalanx radar directed 20 millimeter rapid fire guns, and she had 2 5.
Oh, those things are impressive.
And she had 2 5-inch rapid fire. I can't believe the thing was only around for 18 years. That's kind of not a lot.
Yeah, those phalanx things are really impressive. I never spent much time. I spent most of my time in the belly of the beast down in the engine room, so I didn't spend much time up on the decks. I had a rate where we were at or below the waterline. So I think I went 1 month consecutive days without seeing the sun. It had to be at least 32 days where I didn't see sun at all. I think I remember keeping track.
They made a decision in 1993 to cancel the midlife refueling. They're supposed to last 4 years, 40 years. Mm. So they didn't do the midlife refueling, so they got rid of them all early, which is kind of weird. That's kind of nuts. But there was I was thinking of you there. I got this Core Digest thing, and the guy was saying what ships did he like? He liked serving on an aircraft carrier. And he goes, I hated it. He said, I was on this smaller ship. I don't know, it wasn't a mine thing or something. But he said it was like a couple hundred guys on there. You knew everybody. Everybody, no matter what happened, something broke, everybody pitched in to help because it was like, you know, it was like your group at college almost. He said all of a sudden.
Yeah, I can imagine an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, because it was horrible. Horrible, because I never met anybody. All I did was my job. I never saw the sun because it absolutely sucked. Couldn't wait to get off the thing.
Well, what I liked about the... my time on the Truxton is the real close connections I made with my friends. They were just they're like my brothers, man. Because you're underway and the distilling plants broke. You have 3-hour stay times in the engine room because it's 120 degrees in there, and you're sweaty and you're oily and you have to eat paper plates and you can't take a shower for like 30 days straight. You lay in your pit.
Is it that bad when you're underway, even like in a battleship?
Well, we lost our distilling plant. We only had 2 distilling plants, and we had to ration water and don't take a shower. You lay in your pit and it's 3 inches of soap, sweat-soaked mattress, and everybody's going through that, you know. Or you're going through some swells and the ship's going up and down these 30-foot swells and there's river puke everywhere. I mean, it's just something about being in a situation like that really creates some tight binds, or tight binds.
Well, if you go see the battleship New Jersey over in in Philly, or across the river from Philly, and the in New Jersey, hence the name New Jersey. So you walk in, you see the gun, and everything's just incredible. But then you see the front part, right where the things be bouncing up the most. Yeah, there's like 15 people in this room, and you see these drawers where they look like drawers are people's cots. And you sit there and go, God, in the South Pacific, it's 100 degrees out. Who the hell wants to be in here? It's got to be like a tomb.
Well, you know, when we lost our distilling plant, it was in the water, the seawater temperature was 93 degrees, because I know that because I remember taking logs on it. We were in the Persian Gulf, and it was like 93 degrees seawater temperature. It was crazy.
Where were you?
We were in the Persian Gulf, and it was hot.
It was hot.
And I remember...
Was this thing air-conditioned?
Well, but, you know, when you're on water rationing, you kind of have that stuff turned off, right? So you need to divert all the water to, like, drinking water or whatever. So we were in the Persian Gulf like that for, I don't know, 20, 30 days. It was just hotter than hot. I've never been that hot in my life. Because the steam plant makes steam, right? And it's an old steam plant, so it leaks. So the engine room was just brutally hot and humid.
Well,
we come out of the Persian Gulf, and we go to Hawaii. And all of a sudden,
How long did that take?
Well, it took like a month or so. I mean, we didn't go very fast. But we hit the cooler waters of the deep Pacific, and all of a sudden the temperature on the ship just dropped like, I don't know, 15, 20 degrees. And then 3 days later, we're in Pearl Harbor, and my buddy Sean and I, we got qualified early, so we got some special liberty in Hawaii. We rented a car, and we're driving around Hawaii, and it's like 8 o'clock at night, sun's going down. And I get out of the car, and we're going to go into this Thai food restaurant that's next to a bank. We get out of the car, and I feel cold, so I put on a jacket. You know how warm it was? It was like 90 degrees. I was cold.
Hope you got all new cots.
It was incredible, man. And, you know, so you get these really brother-like ties with people. And the cool thing about these guys is you can have a few too many adult beverages, and, you know, we're all different. We all have different views, and the discussion gets a little heated. And the next morning you wake up and you drink coffee and you laugh about a story that happened 30 years ago. This is really funny, Tom. This is who I was in the Navy. A buddy of mine named Rob, he's from Michigan, and I'm from Idaho. He was bragging about these brand new coveralls the division gave him. And we're in the engine room. And mechanics are dirty, and we're painting, and we're oily. And the electricians and the reactor operators are all in air-conditioned spaces for the most part. And I'm walking toward him, and he's bragging about his brand new coveralls. And I walk up to him with a paintbrush in my hand, and I kind of look at his face or something, and then my paintbrush, which is fully loaded with paint, I roll it from his crotch up to his chest. And I forgot all about that until he shared it yesterday.
God. Well, so you were there how many years?
Brand new coveralls, man, and you don't get brand new coveralls in the Navy every day.
Oh, God. Well, what do you make of what's going on here? We had the tariff. Yeah. I don't understand how come I was kind of reading that yesterday, but the market was actually up for here last night. Now S&Ps are down 62 and NASDAQ down 292, so that's a big move. And we've got the...
I just looked at the M2 numbers. I just looked at M2 numbers, and the quadratic trend that I've been tracking is moderating a little bit. Last month, I had M2 projected to grow about 10%.
A little bit.
A little bit. But from 10 in a year to just 9.3, that's, you know, pretty good moderation.
Well, the monthly...
So I think the economy is starting to slow a bit. I think it's starting to slow.
Well, the monthly in... We're a month behind, right? So the one we just got was July.
Yeah.
So July...
Well, We got some numbers in August.
We got the numbers we got in August.
Like the first week of August.
No. We got the last number we got was the July number. We just got it like last week.
Yeah, I think I have it right here.
But I have the, if you look at the July number and annualize it, we're like 5.2%. The June number was over 7, so it moderated a hair, but it's been over 5 pretty much the whole way since November of 23. The one over 7 was a little bit of an outlier. But Trump wants to do more.
The latest M2 is through August 4th of 2025.
That's not the one I looked at.
I just downloaded it today. I think they release it kind of like, you know, they don't. There isn't a set schedule. I think they kind of.
No, there is for the monthly.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, I'll find it here in a second. But the point being is that it's still very inflationary when you talk about.
Oh yeah, I agree 100%. But it seems to be moderating a little bit, and I think that's
for a month
because
it did.
The economy's slowing.
For a month it did.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking about a number that, I mean, if you look at the change, and this is the weird part. This is the part we opine on a lot. Now, is it someplace somewhere? I'll go back to the 5 year. Someplace somewhere, and it's November of 2023, where we had been coming down from. You don't even know where we started in 2020, but we're up 40% essentially in 18 months, right?
Yeah.
So then the Federal Reserve started coming down, and it was down pretty dramatically, really, from February of 23, March, April, went up a little bit, and then kind of going down a little bit again. But the low tick was December, November 2023. Then all the big countries around the world said, this isn't working. Maybe the markets are going down. We got to maintain the wealth. And from then, it shot back up. And every month, it's almost been a 5% rate.
I still have it at 4.7%.
The last one on the monthly on the chart from St. Louis Fed was the end of month July is the last number here, and the next month was updated August 26th. Next release date is September 23rd, and that'll be the August number.
Yeah.
See, you're right. Then somebody else will give you the weeklies, but they're like 4 weeks behind.
Yeah. Yeah,
because we don't deserve them on time anymore. We only give those to like Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, I understand why they can't give them more.
They aren't giving them, just not to us, Hal.
Yeah.
Just not to us.
We don't have access.
You're a professor. I'm just an investor. We don't deserve this. Right?
We don't need. We can use 30-day-old.
Yeah, why not? Hey, how about we go to a quick break? SP Futures down 64. NASDAQ Futures down 305. You're right back, Stacks and Jacks. Were you sure?
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. Ugly morning here. S&P futures down 64. NASDAQ futures down 303. Dow futures down 332. Individual stocks down here. Healthcare down 249. Microsoft down 437. Goldman Sachs down 8. Meta down 14. That's almost 2%. NVIDIA down 4.56. They were down on Friday as well. That's 2.6%. So we're kind of ugly across the board here over in Europe. And these guys, I think, were up last night, at least for a minute. They're not anymore. DAX down 4.23. Down. That's almost 1.8%. The FTSE down 60.6%. CAC around down 34.7.6. British pound slides 0.9% against U.S. dollar as U.K. fiscal concerns mount. So they've got problems over there. I'm not so sure anybody doesn't have problems here, and I think we're adding to it a little bit. Nikkei up 121.3%. Hang Seng down 120.4%. These guys were up huge last night, and they turned around. Shanghai down 17.4%. On Friday, S&P was down 41. The NASDAQ was down 249. So, that was a big move, and we're not adding to it today. But here's the reason. A 10-year is up 8 basis points to 4.30%. And I've got the 30-year, which is making a huge move, 4.997. So very, very close to that 5% number, which a lot of people are watching. I don't know if it's a technical number, but it's people like to look at it. Oil up on the day as well. $1.68, $65.69. Brent up $1.01. 69.16 gold on a tear, up $33, $35.49. It was over $35.50. Silver up 70 cents, $40.90. Again, I have a lot of people that are involved in that the last few weeks, and they've had a really good last few weeks. Not all my guys are in gold, but a lot of people are. Didn't want to be in some of the other stuff a year ago. U.S. pound, or the euro dollar, the euro is 116. And the British pound is down, like I said, almost 2%, 1.33. It was 1.35. These are getting a 1.5% move in a currency. When we come back from break, we'll talk to Hal about that. That is a massive move. More money involved in that than in the market. Not even close. Crypto up 113, 109, 343. Again, down from like over 120, maybe 2.5 weeks ago. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Jeff. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 62 degrees right now with a high up of 78. Pleasant with plenty of sunshine today, and tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 64 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 89 degrees right now with a high of 109. Hot with some sun and a thunderstorm in spots this afternoon. Tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 86 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Montrose, 31 minutes. We're looking at 51 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook, 119 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, Dan Ryan from 95th, 36 minutes, and lastly Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan 49 minutes. Lastly, MLB, Cubs beat Braves yesterday 7-6, and Diamondbacks lose to Rangers 5-7. Today we got Braves at Cubs 6:40 p.m. White Sox at Twins at 6:40 p.m. as well, and lastly Rangers at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Back to you guys.
So Hal, what'd you think of your hero Bill Belichick getting his ass kicked last night?
I actually fell asleep watching the replay of the Idaho-Washington State game.
how did that work? Who won that one?
Idaho tied it with 2 minutes to go, 10-10, and then Washington State scored, I think, a last-minute field goal to win 13-10.
What?
They're breaking in a whole new team with that new coach. I mean, nowadays, a coach is hired. He doesn't just bring in his coaching staff. He brings in, like, 30 new recruits from his old school or something. It's
crazy. Well, what's his name? Belichick's up to what, 70?
Yeah.
35 freshmen and like 40 other people. He's got 28 returning people or something. I don't know what he's talking about, but it's crazy. What league is Washington?
What was the score in the North Carolina game?
Oh, it was a lot to a little league. His team scored first. And then, I think it was like 48 to 14, something like that.
Who was he playing? I don't even know who he was playing.
TCU.
Wow. Okay. Oh. Home too.
Yeah, and
The shocker to me was Florida State beating the crap out of Alabama.
Yeah, I guess they got a pretty good QB. What is it about these? I'm not going to make enemies here, but maybe I will. What is it about these crazy Southern schools that when the coach walks out of the tunnel to the bench, there's three or four armed Goombas around him, with pistols and the Mountie hats and the whole bit. Does he really need four policemen or three or four policemen to guide him around on the field?
Well, I think in the South, it's probably more of a place where, police are welcomed and celebrated. You know, you're probably not going to see that in a place like, if you're from Chicago or New York, walking into a Cabela's, into the gun section at Cabela's kind of makes you feel uneasy. I took my mother-in-law to Cabela's. It was Cabela's, right?
Yeah.
In Utah. And I walked the gun section. I think this is pretty cool. I feel like I'm in that scene in The Matrix where guns, lots of guns. And my mother-in-law felt really uncomfortable. So if you're from, Chicago or New York and
I'm just saying, you need
with a gun, it probably makes you feel uncomfortable. But in the South, I don't think it makes people
I'm not disparaging the police. I can't imagine.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. It's just a cultural thing, right?
I can't imagine three armed Chicago police.
Yeah. Well, the guy's worth
bringing the Bears coach out of the tunnel to the bench.
Well, the guy's probably worth half a billion. I don't know, $100 million.
They used to do that for Bear Bryant. For it's a big Southern thing. I don't know. What do they think? Somebody's around.
Oh, Bear Bryant. They used to do that with Bear Bryant too.
Yeah. Well, they did it with the Saban. The guy. It's a big Southern thing. I don't get it.
I think it is. Yeah. Probably is.
Anyway, he got his ass kicked.
He had those big hats with the big cop hats.
Oh yeah, he had those. The big cop hats, everything, the whole bit.
The round ones.
Yeah. You couldn't miss them. Yeah. The guys were all buff. It looked like they just came out of a weight room.
I think I watched that game for about, not even the game, the pregame. for about 10 seconds, and I turned the channel.
Well, they scored first.
I can't stand ESPN.
Well, they scored first.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh, it looks like he's going to.
That's usually the thing when you got a home game in college football. The home team usually scores first. You know, I think home field advantage is probably 7 to 14 points.
Well, the Bears, years and years ago, before you and I, they beat, I think it was the Giants. I don't know if it was indoors, the one they played at the Chicago Stadium, whatever, they won 73-0.
And
evidently, on the first or second play or the first drive, the other team, a guy drops the ball in the end zone. And so they asked the guy who dropped the ball and said, if you'd have hung on to that ball, do you think the score would have been any different? And guess what he says? He goes, yeah, it would have been 73-6. they were thinking of some crazy answer like, oh yeah, it would have given us momentum, we'd have kicked their ass. No. So what is going, here's a question for you. What is going on here? We got the rates going up. We seem like we have, whatever you think about the tariffs and whatever all the other stuff, it seems like our guys are not thinking things through. We've managed to piss off and maybe hurt a few economies around the world. And now it turns out maybe we did it when we shouldn't have, or somebody did it when they shouldn't have. And now we might have to give the tariff money back, which I can't see them writing checks, but, you know.
I don't think they're going to give
what?
Money back. I don't see that happening.
That's the big rumor this morning, that what's it going to do to the deficit if they all of a sudden got to write those checks.
Yeah.
I don't think, in the immortal words of one of the guys on the board of the CBOE, we have no idea where we're going, but we're well on our way and we're almost there. That seems to me the governance we're seeing out of all three spots.
Well, if you're a person and you expect your team to run the government well, I got, you know, swampland in Florida to sell you, because your team or their team is not going to do a very good job of running the show. And we have politicians on both sides that don't seem to care about debt and deficits, because we have a Federal Reserve that likes to print money. It's printing money. I'm trying to figure out where that money's coming from, because it's not really coming from the Fed right now. They're not really buying too much. I think it's coming from margin debt. Margin debt had its second print in a row over $1 trillion. Debit balances in customer securities margin accounts, according to FINRA, topped $1 trillion again. While all other debt seems to be going sideways, margin debt is going up, and it continues to climb. So I think the Federal Reserve has printed a bunch of money, and you have these very select few people who can access credit right now, which seems to be kind of scarce relative to where it was a year ago. And they're using it to buy margin, stocks and whatnot. So that's where I think the inflation is coming from, is margin debt.
Well, if you look at I think you and I know this, I'm just kind of for the listeners, if you look at what the Fed's doing and you look at the balance sheet coming down, you might actually say that they're retarding the growth of money, and you probably would be.
I think they're trying to, but some of that
They're not trying hard enough. Because you and I think know.
I think they're doing what they can, Tom.
They could do more.
Well, the only thing they could do is raise the interest rate on reserves. That's the only thing they can do, because that dam. Think about the interest rate on reserves. It's the top of the dam, and if it's low, all that money that's been printed in the past and currently kind of spills over the top, and it comes out as inflation. So the only thing they can do is raise the height of the dam. So I think what they could do is raise interest on reserves and slow it.
Why can't they raise the reserve requirement to 5%?
Well, they have it set at zero right now.
And why can't they raise it to 5%?
Well, I think what they do now is, what they're doing now is they're just kind of raising and lowering the dam. And the dam can be low, the interest rate on reserves can be low, and it can be high. And I think what they do is they think they got the magic switch, the magic dial. And if money comes out of the banking system too fast, they raise it up to encourage banks to just lend amongst themselves.
Right,
can
I back up here for the listeners? Not for you. You know, I don't need to back up for you. We have a system here, and I explain this every once in a while, and I hope it hits home, and I hope I do a decent job. We have a system here where we, the population,
can create and decreate, well, money on our own. I'll give you the simple example. For those of you who used to watch the Cowboy shows, Bonanza. Ben Cartwright sells some pine to somebody. They give him $100,000. He puts it in the Virginia City Bank. If the reserve requirement, meaning how much the bank has to keep in reserve before they lend out some, if that's 20%, they can now lend out $80,000 to Ricky. Ricky puts the $80,000 back in Virginia City Bank. What's the money supply? It's 100 plus the 80, right?
Yep.
And they can then they can turn around and lend 64 again. So in times of bounty where the economy is growing, in order to maintain a money supply, that growth that you would like to have, the Fed actually has to retard that growth. They could raise the discount rate. They could raise the interest rate from the Fed, which they don't really do that much, or they can essentially sell bonds, because now that money comes out of the system, to make up for what Ricky and Hal just did by making money. So, and the other way around, if all of a sudden
the bonds,
and the other way around is if all of a sudden Ricky's deal says screw it, pays the money back to the bank, and now that comes out of that demand deposit, and the next guy says it'll go the other way. We could actually lower the amount of money that we create in the system. So what Hal's saying, if somebody has, you know, 1,000 shares of IBM at PTI, okay, or any firm. Now, we're not going to do this, but our clearing firm, Royal Bank of Canada, or Interactive Brokers, we have two clearing firms. If somebody calls my brother up and says, I got 1,000 shares of IBM, which is $242,000, and wants to borrow $50,000 to do something with it, we'll send him a check for $50,000, right, Hal? And that's going to go into Hal National Bank. Well, guess what? The money supply just grew $50,000, right?
Yeah.
And now, and they can start lending that out. So you can create, quote, money or credit out of people just borrowing, and then all of a sudden, if all that stuff gets paid back, if all of a sudden the market were to crash and somebody were to call Hal and say, hey, you got to give me that $50,000 back because your IBM's too low, now you have to pull it out of your bank account, send it back to us, because we're going
to
get you a margin.
You might have to sell some assets.
Or you might have to sell some IBM. All of a sudden, it can decrease dramatically. So the Fed's job, which isn't easy, by the way, everybody thinks it's just this guy on TV. The Fed's job is to maintain the pool at the level that countrywide, at the level people want to see. Because you don't want it flying up one day and down the next. So they're just as, if they were to grow the money supply, say 2%, or 1.5%, like Hal and I would like to see, instead of the 5 or 6 they're doing. Even that is an all-day job, right, Hal? It's not easy.
Yeah, I think in today's world, with the mix of monetary tools that they have, I think the only way they can really do it is by raising the interest rate on reserves, because that encourages banks.
Why can't you
keep that money in the banking
system? But why should the reserve requirement be zero? It was 20% for 80 years.
Well, I think what it is they created so many reserves. They created so many reserves since the financial crisis that they don't really need to. I think I'm just trying to explain their behavior. I'm not saying I agree with this or not. But I think in their mind, they can dial this interest rate on reserves, and it, what does it do? It keeps bank reserves in the banking system. If it didn't work, there'd be no reserves in the banking system, and we'd need a reserve requirement. So they have this interest rate on reserves. It's kind of like a carrot. If you keep your money in the banking system as a reserve, we'll pay you interest.
Well,
and the way you increase that and prevent the loans that are going to these margin accounts, these guys buying stocks or whatever, you dial up the interest rate on reserves. Because, you know, you can have a reserve requirement. It's more like a stick, right? If you don't have 10% of your deposits on reserve at the Federal Reserve, we're going to come audit you. That's kind of a stick.
Well, yeah.
But interest on reserves is like a carrot, or maybe even a piece of chocolate cake.
You're on the edge of the new world here, and it's not accusatory.
I'm just trying to explain how.
But I'm saying what you could do if you really.
How I agree with it. But I don't agree with this.
But if you really cared about it, I'm saying they don't care. If you really cared about it, you could call all the brokerage firms in the world and say, guess what? The new number is not 50, it's 40 that you can lend out to people.
Yeah.
You can do that, right? Tomorrow.
Yeah, they could, but I think I think in their mind, they had this magic tool they got during the financial crisis right before, right? Back in October 2008.
Yeah.
But they can pay banks interest. And the more interest they pay, the higher the interest rate, the more reserves will be generally held, right? So I think what they're
the reserves that they hold come out, they're out of the system. The Fed's got what do you telling guys that have a bunch of clients that are in gold and silver and gold miner stock? And one part of me says, for a year we waited for the gold miners to go through 30, and now it's 64. So to say we've had a nice 8 months for our people is an understatement. But
well, that's just inflation.
That's what I'm saying. But now my question is, should I say
people are seeing the same thing I am? The question is causing money supply to expand pretty rapidly.
The question for me, because I manage people's money, is: is it over here? Should I say it's been a nice run from 30 to 65 and get the hell out, or is it just starting? I don't know the answer to that. Do you?
You know, in the new world, where the Fed pays interest on reserves to try to keep the inflation bottled up, it's really hard to kind of get a feel for that, because you have this one rate that the Fed is controlling, interest on reserves, and it's got to be balanced against returns that borrowers expect to get. So you got to balance that, and you want, as a borrower, as a banker, you can lend money out to a guy at 8%, or you can lend it to another bank or the Federal Reserve at 4.5%. So I think this one policy tool seems like the Federal Reserve is using exclusively really makes it hard to figure that question out.
Well, it used to be the Fed funds rate.
The idea that central planning is really difficult. They just don't have enough information. And that's why I'm an advocate of free markets. In free markets, prices tell you what you need to know, right? If prices are rising, there's a reason.
They need all of us on the show, I think, anybody who's any kind of a monetarist whatsoever, says you can't have 5, 6, 7% money supply growth.
You can't, no.
When you're growing. To say how sinister this is, they just came out last week and said our growth is what,
3%? 3%,
and, and our the PCE is, the deflator is 2%, right, or 2.1?
Yeah.
All right, so what that means is that the actual nominal growth is 5%, 2% of which is inflation, which means 3% is real. And I suspect, Hal, that just about anybody on this show, and a lot of people maybe aren't, would say our real inflation rate is 5.
Yeah.
So even if the nominal growth is 5, 5 minus 5 is 0.
Yeah.
And really for the last 20 years, our growth has probably been 0. I think you could.
Yeah, we've been saying that for, I think you and I have been saying that for what? Maybe even Carl, for what, 10 years?
Yeah.
Easily? Yeah.
And I think we're right.
Yeah.
And I, that doesn't sound good.
Well, the CPI is such a big lie, and it's a necessary lie to trap more and more people into higher and higher tax brackets.
Yeah, but
right?
But boy, oh boy, it's what would you use today? Now, my brother had some interesting. If you and I did a contract to build somebody 5 houses a year for the next 10 years, and had an escalation clause in there, the CPI is useless. What would we use?
I think so. I'd be using M2. I'd use the M2.
I mean, there's no other.
Use M2 smooth over a couple years.
Well, he was suggesting stuff like lumber index, that kind of stuff, where you dig down into those kind of things, or lumber futures, or copper futures.
Well, I think whenever you use an index for a specific industry, policy can really affect that. So if government comes in and says we can't forest or we can't farm trees for environmental reasons, that affects that. So I would probably go with like M2. And I think M2 growth smoothed over 3 or 4 years would be a good way to do it.
Okay. I mean, I actually would think that would make a lot of sense too. But I mean, I think he's right too that, hey, what do you use in a house? Figure out what you use in a house, and that's your index, right?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is they're coming up with these really cool materials. I was talking to Jesse. He's one of my Navy buddies, and he's bigwig in the IT with Home Depot, and we're talking about all kinds of new products, and we're talking about this wood where you I think you use vacuum, and the chemicals get sucked into the pores of the wood. And what you end up having is something that's like stronger than steel and resistant to termites and whatnot. It's pretty, the kind of things they do today are pretty impressive.
You also have to,
I think innovation's always gonna, I think people are always gonna be able to innovate around the roadblocks the government puts up.
When you say that, I'm chuckling here to myself because my buddy Dr. J, we were at this big money show thing, and there's this guy named Joe Gandolfo. Right, he was a character, but he had this. He looked kind of like Gandolfo, and he looked like Joe DiMaggio, and he'd grab your hands. And, but he'd give you this deal if you wanted him to give you investment advice the rest of your life. It was like $1,000, and he'd give a seminar, and people'd sign up. But everybody that he sent you to, like if you call up and say, you know, I need this, and you go, oh, you got to go to my, you need this kind of insurance, and you send to a guy, and you get a kickback there too, right? So it was kind of a weird deal. But Dr. J says to him, so what if I give you $1,000? He goes, it's guaranteed for life. He had his deep voice, it's guaranteed for life. So John looks at him, and he goes, whose life are we talking about? You don't look so good. But there was a, you know where the Galena Territory is here? It's a gorgeous place. It's in northwest Illinois. Mm-hmm. People look at Illinois to see this big flat piece of whatever. Out there, it's the one spot in the state that the glaciers didn't cover. It is beautiful. It's hilly. It's hillier damn near than the mountains. I mean, you're up and down all over the place. It's gorgeous.
Is it the highest point in Michigan? Or, I mean, Illinois?
It's got to be, because there's a golf course out there called the General. From three of the tees, you can see three states.
I wonder why the glaciers didn't flatten it.
Because the glaciers didn't cover it. It was one little spot they didn't cover.
Anyways. Because the glaciers got as low as the Great Lakes.
Oh, yeah. They made the Great Lakes.
Yeah, yeah. And Manhattan.
So,
yeah.
When they built these houses out there, because some of the guys on the trading floor bought houses, somebody had just come out with that treated lumber.
You know, yeah.
And so instead of putting in, and the original guarantees for that stuff was 40 years. Now, of course, there's no way they could simulate the thing going ahead 40 years. So these guys put all these basements that were actually treated lumber. They weren't concrete. They just made, you know, essentially 6x6 foundations. So all of a sudden, years later, I'm looking out there and they got these houses that are beautiful. They're like $150,000, $135,000. I said, what's the deal with these things? To an engineer friend of mine, he goes, they've all got the treated lumber foundations.
Mm.
He says, you got to jack them up. Because the stuff was supposed to last 40 years and it lasted 20. You got to jack the house up, pour concrete, and drop the house back down. Because that's going to cost you 60, 70 grand even back then. He goes, so the house is really 200 and you got yourself a nice house. But that's what you have to do. But these 40-year guarantees, and I'm like, my mom, she puts this air conditioner in, right? And the thing is a 30-year guarantee. So it conks out at like 29 and a half years. And you know, the older ladies were. She says to me, I got a 30-year guarantee on this thing. I got to find this guy. I go, ma'am, he's got to be dead. just buy a new one. Here, you need the dog. Give it. Just buy it. This is back when they were like $1,000. She goes, oh, I got the dog. Where are you going to go? To his grave and demand the dog? it's over 29 years. You did good with this one. Give the guy a break. But, you know, but now if it's a foundation for your house, it's supposed to last 40 and last 20, it's a whole different story, right?
Yeah.
Because who do you go after? The original company that said it was worth 40 years, they're not around anymore, are they? So when you're saying this about your buddies talking about these new decks, these artificial decks, they come with a 30-year guarantee. 30-year guarantee. Who's going to be around at year 25 when they fall apart giving you a new deck?
Yeah.
Just saying, you know.
Yeah.
So
I had an RX-7 and I did all the maintenance on it, and I'd go to Schuck's Auto Supply, which became Checker, and then Checker became AutoZone or something. And that car, I think I had like, I don't know, 10 components on it that had lifetime guarantees. And the funny thing about those lifetime guarantees is that the alternator would go out like every 2 years. So every 2 years, I would take the old alternator off that I had purchased at Schuck's or Checker, and I would take it to Checker and Schuck's, and they would give me a new one. And I think I replaced my alternator like two or three times, and I got to the point where I'm thinking, you know, I think they give these lifetime warranties on these auto parts, expecting the person to probably sell the car.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Because they weren't transferable.
Because it only extends to the lifetime warranty only applies to the person who purchased it. It doesn't apply to the person who buys it, the car.
Remember the old commercial with the Midas? It was a lifetime guarantee for the muffler. In one of the commercials, the guy is pulling in a Model A.
Yeah.
And they put the new muffler in. He goes, see you in a few years, boys. And they're all looking at him with dirty looks on their face. So, by the way, this morning the gold has backed off a hair. And the 30-year has backed off from 4.99 to 4.98. You think the Fed's putting money in? I bet they are. What do you make of this?
I don't know if they're putting money in. I just think money's leaking out of the system in the form of loans, and it's going to a certain group of
I'm talking about this morning when they see this. Yeah. They don't want this thing over 5%.
Yeah.
What do you make of it without, you know, some, you know, political shot here at anybody? Are any of our people, some of the people, I mentioned this with Kenny earlier, some of the people we're pissing off are people that we owe a whole lot of money to.
Yeah.
I mean, if we put Japan into a recession and they don't, and they cut back on 40% of the money they send here, what does that do to us?
Yeah.
But I keep wondering when my hope
with this whole thing was that a lot of these countries have tariffs and a lot of these countries have non-tariff barriers, and there's all kinds of ways to bar trade. I mean, you know, like New York State, for example, tried to bar the importation of milk from New Jersey because having it cross the Hudson River was somehow unsafe, and fortunately the Supreme Court knocked it down. So there's all kinds of ways to bar trade. You know, it's not just tariffs. And what I was hoping, and these free trade agreements that our governments have signed through the decades, they're not free trade agreements. They're cartelling agreements where you have to have a license, and if you're the firm, the export of this particular product, if you're the one able to get in, it's not.
Well, they were way freer
they've
than.
They've never been free trade.
But they were way.
I was kind of hoping that whole system would get knocked down, and you'd have the only barrier would be like a 5 or 10% tariff on both sides.
I think
that would be a better.
I'm going to submit to you that the North American free trade agreement, while not by your and my definition free,
is not free.
Was way freer than before it was signed.
Probably, yeah. I would say yes, but it's not free. It's far from free.
Well, look at the examples here. The biggest example.
It's marginally closer to free trade.
What's the easiest example here? Is if you go to the store now, you're going to see Coca-Cola in the little bottles. It's imported from Mexico.
Yeah.
Now, what's different about those?
They have pure cane sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, why don't they use sugar here?
Because it's heavily tariffed.
It's the same thing that we have on.
Well, I think the corn syrup is heavily subsidized, but at the same time, the cane sugar that's imported from other countries is heavily tariffed.
We have the same thing we do to sugar, is what Canada does to dairy products from Illinois. What is sugar a pound? Last time I haven't bought sugar in 40 years. But I think the tariff, you know, somebody slapped me from across the room. I think the tariff is 4 cents a pound up to a certain point. And once we get over a certain number, because the 4 cents a pound doesn't really do much, okay?
No. Huh?
But then once it gets to a certain point, it becomes 16 cents a pound.
Yeah.
Which all of a sudden is a big deal. Same thing with the way we go to Canada. A certain amount can go to Canada with dairy products very cheaply, and if it gets over that number, then it jumps because the Canadian people say, we have to maintain our own dairy farms. If we import this much stuff here, it's not affecting our guys that much. As long as we have enough dairy farms where if we had to, we could feed our own people, we're okay with it. Same thing with rice in Japan. Japan has a night. You're not going to change their mind. You can stick something up there behind. They want to be able to make enough rice in Japan where if the world goes to hell, they can feed themselves. And you can't argue with that. So they say, okay, we're going to import a certain amount, but over a certain amount, we're not going to do it because we want to maintain at least the ability to feed ourselves in a bad day from here. And the same thing we do with sugar. You're right. It's not free, but it was way freer than anything before that, I think. I believe.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I 100% agree. But man, teaching this history of economic thought class, what was going on with China and England back with the trade and the opium wars?
Oh yeah.
It just reminds me of what I said a few years ago, 2017, 2018. The reason why power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely is because history tends to repeat, and repeated history repeats repeatedly. The Chinese have flipped the script. They're now the British,
yeah,
trying to get into other markets. And they're using fentanyl the way the Brits used opium. And it's just nuts how history tends to repeat.
Well, we gotta talk about this more, yeah, next week, y'all, because it's pretty serious about how that's happening in this, yeah, this Russia, India, China. And the way to combat that is to have somebody here who says, okay, you guys do that. By the way, Europe, Japan, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada are one hell of a lot stronger. You're not gonna, but now we're pissing those people off.
Yeah.
I mean, we're the ones that are isolating ourselves. Yeah. Anyway.
I kind of wish the whole system could be scrapped. In every country, the only trade barrier that every country imposes is maybe a modest 5% tariff.
I don't disagree. By the way,
just get rid of all other restrictions.
SP Future now down 75, you know. NASDAQ futures down 354. This is ugly, especially after Friday. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Okay.
That's all, folks.